Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby, and I'm just as pleased as could be to be with you guys today. No particular reason. That's how joy is. But no, there's something brewing with this topic. But it's just basically I'm doing well and wanting to share. I'm about to go on a little trip with my partner, Chester, in the beginning of May. You may or may not see or hear a podcast episode next week. Now, when we're traveling, you know, that's time for us. And so I tend to like not do a ton of sessions, just spend time with the family. At the same time, it's nice to, I'm like a musician. I don't want to be away from my instrument very long, which means I like to express and create. So you could hear a podcast next week that's just somewhere on the road. Maybe we'll be sitting in, I know we're going to go through the desert, just sitting in a beautiful desert scene outside, looking at the sky. Never know, you might hear me do a podcast about the aliens again. No, I doubt it. Okay, here we go. I want to do this before we go. I was going to do a farewell, not farewell like last episode ever, but I actually was about to record and release an episode of just me saying, okay, I'm going to take a break. That's because we were traveling, but when I sat with it, I thought, well, there's a few topics I want to cover. I was going to take a shorter break, actually. Come back and cover those. What I'm trying to do with podcast, if you want to know, is keep a clean series of expressions here in one place, although it's on 15 different platforms or more, where anyone who wants to know at least my perspective on what this work is about, this is where it is. And it's actually contained in these podcasts. I'll give you a list of the ones. If you want to focus on the following episodes that I've done here, write them down or something. All your suffering is connected to one thing. And then approval seeking, recovering from the greatest human addiction. And then critique of presence practices. Also making self-realization authentic. And finally, suffering is optional. Those are the podcast episodes that lay out, I think, this work or my experience with it, which I think is, among all the episodes, those are the most helpful for listeners who are interested in this practice. The context that one that might be helpful to do this work. Okay, and maybe this one too. This episode, but not really here to like get on that list. I want to talk to you about healing and forgiveness. God, talk about like that's another topic you can only share from personal experience on. That's all you can ever share on anything. But healing and forgiveness is just so personal for all of us. Or not healing and not forgiving is a very personal affair. Even though at the very ground of our experience is an impersonal awareness which permeates it all. And that's been my experience through the last 16 years. Every moment is just presence permeating it through it all. But that doesn't mean there wasn't suffering, as I've shared many times on this podcast. And so here, we're not just interested in the awareness that permeates through it all. We're interested in the awareness that really permeates through it all, including the body, which keeps the score on our suffering and contains trauma and repression. When we see the presence pervades through the body fully, now we're talking. And that's this work. Because now we're talking about making suffering optional. Okay, but this brings me to this topic today. I'm not going to pontificate endlessly, trust me. I just want to share some key contextual and practice things that I've seen working with people and in myself. Number one, let's define healing, because when I bring terms back, like when I did Suffering is Optional, that episode, one of the first things I did was define what I mean by suffering. Carrying over in time, enduring, identifying with, but more than anything with burying. That what more do we carry over in time than our buried emotions? And we suffer and endure life because we can't be ourselves, because of this trauma. To me, trauma and spirituality are the same thing. Exactly. There's no difference. Emotional repression work and spirituality are the same thing for me. Because if you don't take awareness down to the body, you still have suffering. So they have to be the same thing for me. Because I'm interested in ending suffering. Now, healing, I will define. I'm interested in helping you guys end suffering. This is what this is all about. And in doing so, I want to define words instead of just using more words. And then here we go, a bunch of concepts. Healing is a little, I can see why people have a problem with that word. And more than one person does in my own audience for a number of reasons. But let me just say this. Yeah, if you put it out in time as a carrot, healing or awakening or enlightenment or freedom is always going to kind of get under our skin. Because it's like, oh, I have to go and I have to heal now. That sounds like a really long, drawn out process. Well, yeah, it is when you put it in time. But that's what our emotional repression system is doing. It's like creating time to keep us safe from the buried stuff. So the more time you can create, the safer that you are. So if I say healing and you say, oh, time, then that keeps you from healing. See? It can be a block, because then you think, oh, to heal, I have to do all that time. No, you're creating that in the moment, because healing is just making the unconscious conscious now. It's presence work. To me, doing emotional repression and trauma work is the same thing as awakening for this reason. I'm going to get to the healing and forgiveness part, but universally, if you look at the various traditions throughout history, awakening is where we identify with something. It's unconscious. In other words, we believe it. Like, I'm a loser. And then that thought and feeling comes into awareness. And now the loser is an object appearing to awareness. It's not what we are. It's happening in what we are. And then that thought and feeling falls away, and what we are, the awareness remains. That's essentially the process of awakening. When you see that the stuff coming and going isn't fundamentally you, but that it all has to be allowed for freedom. Now, that's similar to repression work, because at a very deep unconscious level, we're identified with the emotions that we buried. In other words, we're going to find in our bodies, I'm angry or I'm sad. But I can't feel it. And there's the resistance, the fear that's buried in the body, which makes it a really strong identification that we're carrying around. This is the core of our suffering. So this is the identification that we carry around more than anything. Buried emotions. Science tells us this, and so does our body, when we're skillful. But it's the same process as all the traditions. It just has a modern twist to it, because now we're going to make this unconscious repression conditioning, this buried program of I'm angry but I can't, or I'm sad but I can't, conscious, which just means we're bringing it into awareness. See that? That's the universal mechanism of awakening. We're bringing unconsciousness into awareness to see, eventually, through a process, that this buried anger or sadness or hurt is also not what we are, but can be fully allowed. And there's the end of suffering. And how long will it take? Well, how much time will your mind create to keep you safe from the buried stuff? Let's get busy on a modality that catches you in your game of creating time. Now, if you, that's just the setup for this topic, I think is a good one. Healing and forgiveness. I want to add forgiveness in there. I didn't add it in the title because I'm a Casey Musgraves fan. If anybody caught on to that, healing doesn't happen in a straight line is a Casey Musgraves song. I would just love to sing it for you. I really would. The melody is just beautiful. But anyway, I won't. You can go listen to it. She's much better at singing her song. But anyway, it's a great line because, see, it just reduces, I think, some anxiety for people who are suffering. To say, look, you don't have to do it all at once. You don't have to do anything but be here now and process skillfully. You know? And then, and just to let you know, so you don't keep your eye on the ball, true embodiment is not a straight line, is another way of saying that. Awakening itself is not a straight line. There are some that will say, well, once I recognize the presence that's not in time, I'm done. But if you have buried emotions, you're not, because those produce suffering. So there's a process, and those buried emotions and the programming, that's what creates the process. We're creating time and resistance and then looking for freedom and healing, which we deny ourselves by unconsciously creating time. The consciousness here does that. But we now are awake and intelligent enough to say, okay, we're going to catch ourselves in our game, and we are going to heal here, but it's not going to be a time game. It's going to be presence. And we're going to be in the awakening process that they've been doing throughout history. We just have this modern slant to it. It's not just that everything coming and going is coming and going. It's that everything that's, it's everything. In other words, it's the stuff that never came and went. Healing has to include the stuff that never came and went, the buried stuff. And when that can come and go, when you can feel and express that anger that was once buried, and that's integrated into your system, or the sadness or the hurt, there's your healing. And yes, it's a process. And fully being your authentic self and healing like that is not going to happen tomorrow, even though the repression wants that to stay safe. And you don't have to be fixated on time as being real. You can use time as a way to process. Time is being created by you. That's your resistance. You can use that when you're skillful to see what your consciousness is doing. It's actually adding time to the healing process to keep you safe and to get you love and survive, it thinks, but, you know, it's to keep you safe from the buried stuff, from what you don't want to feel. Okay, I usually don't like to end a segment on the 13-minute mark. I'm not superstitious, but that's one thing I generally won't do, and I will process that. It's not because I think that 13 is unlucky. It's because that has never created suffering for me, and I've always kept to it. So I'm going to do some inquiry right now, real quick. I can just end on the minute 13, which is coming up in just a few. Yeah, there's no energy on that. I'm just going to end on 13 minutes. Stay tuned, guys, because I feel like I've really experienced healing and forgiveness. I got some stuff to share. Well, I don't believe in luck. So number 13 can't be unlucky. I'm so glad that I worked through that, though, with you guys. Okay. Healing. Just to define it here, it's what Carl Jung, maybe even Freud, talked about making the unconscious conscious. But I think that's also, as I said, part of just the universal mechanism of awakening. Now we just know how to take it deep into the somatic body where the buried emotions are. And although that might sound like scary work, it's not, if you're skillful. It's the mind that psychs us out. Okay, so healing, then if it's just about, if it's making the unconscious conscious, then it is a process because our system doesn't want that healing. Our operating system, as we've said on here, you guys may know from your own work, is we have to stay safe, get love, hold emotion back, and suffer. So the system doesn't care about healing unless it can stay safe that way. So the system might go to some practice or method that makes us feel safe for a moment or for a bit, but that's about safety. See, that's not about healing. And speaking of forgiveness, we might forgive somebody on the surface, but that just might keep us safe if we have buried emotions. If we're afraid to go into the buried anger or hurt about what happened with that person, then if even forgiveness. See, there can be like a superficial healing and forgiveness when you don't go to the program that's running it, all the programming. And that's maybe the first thing I want to say about it, is the bypass has gotten into every area of our lives in spirituality, if you look, and you can't really even see it until you get to the unconscious level. But I think that this topic is perfect. That this whole topic, to explain this with the unconscious, this topic being healing doesn't happen in a straight line. And what the hell is forgiveness? That was too long of a title, though. I couldn't put both of those things on there. Okay. I have to tell the story of me and Dan. When we were first developing KI, there were some issues I hadn't worked out yet from being bullied when I was a kid, because I hadn't gotten to the anger repression yet. When we first developed the work, we hadn't gotten to that level. So just a classic case of bypassing is, I thought that I was going to do some other processing around the bullying, not knowing how to get to the buried emotions. And I reached out to my bully and took ownership on my part, because the processing showed me that I had been bullying him on some level for a lot of my life. You know, just how our consciousness is when we're hurt. But reaching out to him was some form of like forgiveness. It wasn't necessarily trying to get forgiveness from him, because I've already, Dan and I have been in the 12-step program, and we both know that, you know, seeking amends from someone is really not about getting anything from them. It was part of my process because I was in pain and I didn't have the answers back then, but I knew that it was connected to the trauma. So I was doing the best I could with the kind of inquiry that we had in the beginning, which 2D, if you know what I mean by that, that's what most inquiry is out there in the world. It just wasn't getting to my chronic pain. I couldn't completely forgive my bullies and other people in the past that hurt me. Not fully, I mean completely, because the chronic pain still registered non-forgiveness. See, what it really registered or had to show me was anger repression. But Dan and I didn't know how to get to it at that point. So I just knew that this pain was somehow connected to these bullies and to Dad and Mom. Doing the best I could, I reached out to the lead bully, the biggest guy who did most of the... And his response was, is this serious? Because it was kind of an odd thing to send him. What Dan and I were doing was like, what would happen if you just took full ownership of your side of something? But I couldn't, because I hadn't gotten to the buried anger. So, you know, anytime you try to like seek forgiveness or get it or resolve something and you still have unresolved stuff, it's not going to work. And then when he said, are you serious or is this serious? It is like, yeah, of course. This didn't bring what I wanted. I've got trauma. So we have to go back to the drawing board. And Dan had his own stories that he'll tell about the non-forgiveness and the lack of healing in his life. I'm not here to tell his story. He's just been involved in a lot of my story in the last 10 years, excuse me. to get comfortable. I'm okay with the word healing now because I don't see it as something in time. I live as presence. That's what you are also. So time doesn't weigh on me, but I was carrying repression, and that is the time that's past. But time at the conscious level isn't there. My mind is quiet. The time that I was carrying around was the past in the body. It's very easy to mistake peace for both healing and forgiveness. Because remember, peace can easily become a trauma response for, say, either an anger or a hurt or sadness repressor. Because who with trauma doesn't want peace? So it just becomes a trauma response. That's not bad, but that's also not necessarily resolving something. Or forgiveness, if that's important. So the great takeaway here, so that I don't hide the ball. So what through the years I've learned is, until you get to the holding back of the emotions that are creating suffering from some event, you know, in the past or whatever, you can't experience healing. I don't know how you would. There's no science around anything else. Like even Dr. Gabor Mate says, if you want to heal disease, discover your authentic self. He's a doctor. That's backed by science. Because what he's saying is that emotional repression is a major contributing factor to a lot of disease, that we cannot ignore it, and that to get better, we have to work at that level. Work with that trauma. Once we understand this, real healing can happen. If we don't understand this, we might seek healing or reprieve or even forgiveness in a manner that's being driven by the repression, which is more about staying safe, perhaps getting other people's love and approval, than it is about being real and truly living a life without suffering. Because I think what you'll find is when you heal, which just means when you make the unconscious conscious, as you do, you see that needing forgiveness outside of yourself goes away in many regards, because you were seeking that just like you were seeking anything else outside yourself, because you couldn't open to all the parts of yourself. Or if you can't now open to, like I couldn't open to my buried anger, you'll seek forgiveness like I did with my bully. It's okay. But will you get it? Will you get what you're looking for? Okay, and so what is deep healing and forgiveness, or true healing, let's say, and forgiveness? It's a great question. It really does have to do with authenticity. I think it has to do with being awake and authentic. I mean, I've listened to people tell stories of healing, but if you look at the science and you trust your body, the emotional repression and the trauma that we have runs a lot of different forms of suffering in our lives. And so when I hear people on the internet say things like, well, I healed my chronic fatigue. Well, then how come you didn't heal? Then why? You should be experiencing relational freedom then. You should be experiencing, like, just living your good life now. Because what the repression that was driving that chronic fatigue was your life force. So if you actually really heal that chronic fatigue, like the science says, you got to get to that energy that you're storing there. And if you do, then you're going to experience more than the end of chronic fatigue. I can imagine that if I go interview your husband's going to say, she's just more authentic. And we have a closer relationship with more boundaries. And if I interviewed the person who had it, I mean, if you really healed. But see, we want so much to believe that we've healed, but what is healing, you know? Because if we're not careful with that, again, we'll treat it in a superficial way and we'll bypass. And I don't think the answer is to throw the term out again. For people, let me just say this real quick before I make a case for true healing and forgiveness. That when I hear people, for example, say, Scott, why do you use the word healing? I say, well, why? What's the energy that you have behind it? Can we just talk about that? Because it's just a word in reality. And if any word, in my view, is only useful if it points in some way to experience. And here it does, you know, roughly point to what happens when we're not suffering anymore, or we're in the process of ending our suffering. If that's not healing, I don't know what is. So do we throw the word out just because it triggers us? Or do we discover why the word triggers us? And what I find is in spirituality, especially, a lot of us, including me, would dismiss certain terms, relative things in the world under the guise of, oh, these are just arisings, or it's all illusion. And but we did it with a motive, with a motive to avoid feeling something. So when I've asked people who've criticized my use of the word healing to do inquiry with me, what I found quite often was that they have energy on that word because they used to be on this healing search, which was, you know, created suffering for them, constantly trying to heal, trying to chase the future healing. And so the word itself is triggering. But I say, but now we have this work that shows you that the consciousness that's creating that seeking for healing is coming from the emotional repression for which you're seeking healing. And so you can't find healing in the future because that's the turning away from the driver of suffering. It's quite innocent and natural, but you're right. I understand the trigger around thinking of healing as just a time game. But to throw that word out completely, you could be robbing yourself of true healing. And so we can just recontextualize the word. We can say, look, it's all presence. This is all there is. There's not time. We just believe that to stay safe until we don't anymore, until that's not necessary. And then we can't sit here and call healing a time game when we're living more as what we are, the timeless awareness. But we can't exclude time and push it away, right? And bypass, like, oh, I don't want to deal with that. Or healing. No, I say we utilize it. So if we get triggered by the word healing or by the idea that it will take time to heal, here we utilize those things. Capitalize on those things, meaning this, and I've said this before, but it's good to repeat it for some people who it might benefit. If I believe in my own consciousness that if I start doing this work, and it's just going to take a long time, well, then I'm doing that unconsciously to stay safe. But I don't know that when I first get here, and I think when I ask Scott Killaby a question, that's just a very earnest question that he needs to answer, because how could I answer it? It's your path, Scott. It's not mine. But as Scott Killaby, I would say, yeah, it is the path that Dan and I created, but developed it. But we developed it to help you see right in this moment that you're creating that question and that belief in time, not for the reason that you think. It looks like you're being earnest because you want to get to the end. That's what your conscious mind is doing. But unconsciously at the repression level, that time game keeps you safe, including the time question. And if you can keep fixating on the future, you're not focused then on the stuff that you don't want to feel that's driving all that. And that's exactly what your system wants, because it's interested not in healing or getting anywhere, unless it's about safety, right? Or And you know what I'm saying? We might be chasing healing because that keeps us safe, the chase. See, we like that kind of healing. Go chase the healing. We also like the frustration of not getting there because then that gives us more time. But we can't admit this to ourselves because we're not conscious to it until we do what universally the traditions have always said. Make the unconscious conscious. Make what you're identified with that's making you suffer, bring that into awareness. And here, now we have science, that's repression. So there's your time answer. If you're skillful, you can create that. You can utilize that, seeking of how long it will take to actually heal, right? In the moment, by realizing there's no time, that's your consciousness making it up, so you bring it into the inquiry, and that takes you down into the body, and you see how you're making up that time to avoid what you've buried. And that's how the skills work. I love it. It's so much fun to help people see that it's all within their consciousness, what they're looking for, but it takes skills because we were not born with those skills. We did not learn these skills because had we been born or learned them, we wouldn't have suffered, and we need to suffer. So the unconscious says, stay safe, get love. Okay, so hopefully now, have we settled the time thing on healing and the anxieties around that? And now I'm talking about presence and inquiry that happens only here because everything happens here. And when your mind dreams up the future, we utilize that. And we'll show you how. When you're holding on to the past, we'll show you how to process that. That's all happening now. It's all here in your body. In your unconscious, whatever you want to call that. Okay, so now that I'm glad that I got that out of the way so I can just cleanly talk about healing and forgiveness. And so my next subject is really how healing doesn't happen in a straight line. Stay tuned. Well, it's not just that our consciousness thinks up time and future as resistance and seeking. During the processing here with this work, the system creates resistance. Especially as you go into the unconscious, the system is doing what it's supposed to do, fight back and resist. It thinks this is not safe to heal. Remember, it only wants safety. So there's our resistance. When we go in skillfully, we contend with that resistance and we utilize that too. We make that conscious. We'll show you that also. But it's important to know before you start that your operating system, remember, no matter what you tell yourself at the conscious level, and don't trust me, say it for yourself, your unconscious conditioning just wants to stay safe and get love. So the work here is to very safely but effectively bring that conditioning into awareness that's demanding suffering, which means it demands that you have to hold this particular emotion back. And then your mind tells you, yeah, that's how it should be. I shouldn't express that. And then it can feel like a done deal. It's so buried. But if you understand that that buried emotion is really behind the suffering, and by reading the science and checking into your body and doing some work here, you won't let that stop you. And you'll learn to make that conditioning in the body conscious, and you'll start to see results if you're skillful. Right away, you'll see it. And if you don't, you should stop. And we can talk about what results are, but it's ending suffering. In any moment, you have skills to end whatever suffering is there. And because you're transmuting and making conscious the root of the suffering, you can expect that suffering to go away in time. But remember, the end time part is because your system doesn't want this. It doesn't want it. And if you don't understand that, you'll keep thinking it's the method or those three teachers that you left that didn't wake you up they may have something to do with it, and maybe me too. But you have to take responsibility here, or you're not going to get the freedom. And maybe responsibility number one is just that. Coming to this seeing early and talking about this early, to understand that you have this conditioning that's demanding you stay safe and get love, which is the holding back of emotion, the unprocessed emotions of fear and other things. And you know, if you're not aware of that, that very conditioning is the resistance to your path to your freedom. It's demanding safety, and so it's going to keep demanding safety and love as long as it remains unconscious, no matter what you do at the surface. So again, you can meditate, rest as awareness. Nothing wrong with that. But the unconscious is still unconscious. It's going to run your life, and you're going to call it, well, apparently Carl Jung said you're going to call it fate, but I would just call it suffering. Or no, you, as long as the unconscious remains unconscious, it'll control your life, and you'll call it whatever you can to see that you're not creating. I mean, to not see that you're creating it. I think that's a better way for our practice to understand that. You know, take that seriously, really, because the people that take that seriously are the ones that get free here. And the ones that can't see that or fight that or think that somehow it's outside of them, they're not creating it. Their resistance isn't coming from the emotions that they buried. These identities are just popping up for no reason in awareness. That's to take a very unconscious view of it all that has no backing in science. This is why I've substantially kind of just for myself thrown away the framework that everything arises and falls to awareness. Just rest as awareness, you'll be free. Because it's not everything arises and falls to awareness. And so how are we going to heal, let alone find forgiveness, if the very thing that's creating our suffering doesn't arise so that it can be healed? Because remember, healing is awakening. It's just bringing the unconscious into awareness. If we're not going to do that, well then, no wonder some people want to throw the word healing away, because we're not going to heal. But here's the thing I also want to say is that we're not broken. We're not broken. Let's talk about that a little bit, because it can feel like we're broken. And I used to fucking hate when teachers would say, you're not broken, you're perfect. Because I'd be like, well, that doesn't translate to my relationship, you know? I don't feel that. But it's true. I don't want to say it to you that way, though. I want to say that, look, I totally understand why you think you're broken or unlovable like I did, unlovable, or wrong, or not good enough. If you look at it from a trauma perspective and a KI perspective, your system demands that. Believe it or not, our systems produce that for safety. It's just safer to believe I'm unlovable and was my whole life than it ever was to walk into where my loved ones were and just feel and express everything that was true for me and end my suffering. So we can feel broken, though. And to the extent that's a belief system, of course, then that's not what we are. So we can see that. And most really good non-dual pointings or teachings or ways of, you know, investigating will show you that the identities are not what you are. But why just keep picking the weeds out of the top of the garden when you've got the roots in the ground about to create more and more and more and more? Because we're producing those identities unconsciously. Our programming is. as long as we believe in these stories of deficiency, they're just so close to victim consciousness. And that's why we produce those unconsciously, so that we can stay in the paradigm that we have been victimized, that something happened to us, which it did, relatively speaking. We got hurt when we were kids or in a past life or something. We're carrying this around right now in our lives. And it really feels like we're broken. It really feels like we're victims, even if we don't have the conscious thought. Look at when someone does something to you. Don't you ever feel like they just hurt me? Like they're just treating me like, see what I mean? Like that. And we might just not see until we do this work that that's just safer. To go back to what was safer when we were kids, to be that victim, to be that not good enough kid, than it was to feel and express our emotions, or it may even feel right now, to feel and express what's true for us. If you can really see this, this is the healing. Is that when we were kids, these identities, unlovable, I'm not good enough, and victim, got formed for good reasons. We should be grateful. Until we live in a different world where that's more conscious, we needed these identities to survive the parents that we had who were unconscious and the teachers and everyone else on earth. It just simply wasn't safe to be ourselves here. And that's that feeling of like, oh, I don't belong on earth, you know, like I'm a misfit. So many people say that. It goes with that sense of deficiency and lack and yet we're producing it, and we're so innocent, and we'll keep producing it until we're ready to heal, which means go to what we couldn't feel and express when we were kids, when we were truly victimized, because we cannot take responsibility for what happened when we were kids. And I think that has to be part of healing, or it is in my framework. You know, you can do what you want, but here I suggest on the original trauma, when these identities were forming to keep us safe, we had to do that to survive. That's a done deal. For us to go back and say, well, we did that, is not the kind of responsibility that I'm saying that we should take. Nor is it any kind of moral responsibility about right or wrong or good or bad. The responsibility that we have to take is what happened after the injury. Once the programming was imprinted in our bodies, and now we're suffering, and that the suffering is being generated unconsciously from within our bodies, now no one else. See, we can tell the story that everyone is just continuing to victimize us, but we're now creating it. After the original trauma, we create that and the sense of I'm not good enough in relationship to stay safe from what we've buried. So see how we don't take responsibility because we can't. We're not conscious enough. And so we'll keep believing these identities and not healing, which really just means not getting to what we buried. It's safer just to believe we're victims. Not good enough. And to feel justified in it. You know, I felt that. So this is why healing doesn't happen in a straight line. One reason is because we don't want it to. No, we also don't want it to happen quickly. We don't want it to happen at all, actually, at the unconscious level. So it's a miracle that it happens at all, in my view, and it can. But we have to make conscious the conditioning that doesn't want it. That just wants the safety. And for that, we have to go to repression. So healing doesn't happen in a straight line. Of course, that's what this episode is about, but I wanted to really get into it here, is I, for all of you out there, true healing does not happen in a straight line. Now that we've defined healing and we know it's possible, to say that it could happen all at once, our systems don't want that. They seek safety, not healing. Healing involves feeling the stuff that doesn't feel safe. That's going to take a while because we resist that. And that's okay. I love that about us because we're just trying to stay safe here as apparently separate people. But if we want to end suffering, we just have to look at all this, right? That it doesn't happen in a straight line because we don't want it to happen at all. And then when it starts to happen, what would a straight line be? Hell no, I don't want to feel the anger. That's what I remember. I don't remember like developing this work and feeling like, well, by next week I should be done. Because my nervous system really loves this modality. My conditioning that's been bearing anger since childhood has got me all the love and safety you can ever imagine is just going to totally fall in line with this modality and go right along with it. And by next Friday, I'm going to be healed completely and no suffering. No, I never did I think that way because I felt the power of the conditioning that drives our suffering. It was in my chronic pain. And that's the screaming child that they talk about, but there's no child there. You know, it's the conditioning. There's no literal entity there. But it's a powerful mechanism that has already decided what we're going to do with those emotions and demands that we continue doing it. And so that's not going to happen by next Friday. Hell, I couldn't even do KI for like 10 or 15 minutes at first because it worked so well. The rapid fire, or just the first iterations of that even, because it was like, oh, we don't want this. Hold on. Yeah, I understand this could bring freedom, but let's go. I need to go. Is there a Netflix? Is there a new Netflix? Babe, did I see that Ozark is out? Let's watch that. That's what mine was like. There's my crooked line right there. My healing path. I lived in an RV, as you guys know, and I was doing very diligent, regular, everyday practice once I developed this work, and it was definitely helping. Just in so many ways. But it wasn't a straight line at all. And I just want to be so honest about that because I have compassion with people out there who think it should be or think that healing should happen instantaneously or awakening or anything. True healing, true awakening, not an experience, not an unembodied shift, not just I got rid of a symptom or I think that this disease is not showing up anymore, but like healing, which affects all areas of life. Because the same one thing, you know, the one mechanism is behind a lot of it. So we're not broken. But the mechanism that continues to insist on that does that for safety, right? And to get love and to survive as a separate self. So we can definitely see through the identity I'm broken and see there's nobody here who's broken without even getting, or most of it at least, to most of it without even getting totally to the repression. Because it's the repression that's the core of everything. So if one of the little forms of, you know, its suffering goes away, it has other ways to suffer. See, so my unlovable identity, which kept me from, I thought, healing for so long, went away. I thought, okay, healing. But then the mechanism of repression just upped the chronic pain. It just seems to go into other vulnerable areas. As Dr. Sano said that. And I would say it even goes into other areas of consciousness. And not just areas of the body, repression does. It's always there running things. It's not going to stop generating suffering just because you see that one of the forms of it, identity, is lighter or not as much there, it's a great thing to experience, by the way. This, the identities not being as strong. And that happens here as part of the healing process. But the reason I'm focusing on it is because we don't want to bypass and land just on, okay, there's no broken person here, and so I'm healed. Or there's just that story that I'm broken isn't here anymore, so I must be healed around whatever happened in my past that made me think I was broken. But that's not the full healing, guys, because the science doesn't say that the identity I'm broken drove all your suffering. It says repression produces, and your body will show you it produces I'm broken to stay safe. You got the I'm broken. Quiet. What about the programming that's still keeping you safe emotionally and then still producing suffering of some kind? And that goes back to what is healing. I like how we say in non-duality sometimes, well, there's no one here to be healed. I've seen there's just awareness. That's easily a bypass. It's an important thing to see that there's that the self-identity is empty. But, well, I mean, if there's still repression in the body, seeing through that identity doesn't change that. That there could be, that there really isn't that kind of healing or seeing that you might think. We just have to check into our bodies and then we know. When we know how to check into repression, we can check to see whether we're bypassing on healing, on whatever we call it. If we're triggered about the word healing, then call it something else. So healing doesn't happen in a straight line because we don't want it to happen at all. And when it happens, we don't want it to happen in a straight line because we have a system that rejects anything other than really staying safe, getting love, and surviving. Or it's not interested. So the best we can do is make that conscious. That's a process because our system doesn't want that because it wants to stay safe. So we have to contend with resistance as just a natural part of life and a natural part of this path. And this path is actually just about making that resistance conscious. Our greatest resistance is at the repression level. The unprocessed trauma. That's our suffering. That's what we're carrying over in time. If there's any healing, it would be the end of that. Carrying over that repression in time. Now, people have said recently, I'm going to go into the next segment with this, but like, well, how do we know we can rid our bodies of all repression? Okay, so let's talk about that. That's part of healing isn't a straight line because we naturally get, we have these questions that come up. So we need to answer the question, but is the question a fixation that just keeps us safe? For example, I'll talk about that. And again, why healing doesn't happen in a straight line because we don't want that. Stay tuned. So on that question of can we clear all repression? Well, first of all, do you need that answer to start? Even if you started to do repression inquiry and discovered you just started finding freedom that you could never have had before, pretty soon, would you stop and go, well, if I can't get to all the repression, I should just not bother? No, you wouldn't do that. And if you could take care of the seeking along the way, so that would die out too, because that's part of the repression. Wouldn't you want to just do that instead of making it so much about time and whether you're going to get to the end of time or repression or the end of seeking? See, so we just have to be careful. Can you end all repression? My experience, when I go into my body, I did it. I sat down right before this segment to see. I lined up everyone in my life that I've done anger repression work with. And I said, I can get angry at them. And the only thing that came up was me sitting there eating popcorn, watching to see if it happens. It's like, I'm not angry at them. That's the other thing. Doing repression work, when I say, First, when I say, I'm not angry at them, there's no contraction. Because the contraction in our bodies is carries the repression. But when I say, I can get angry at them to see if there's any objection, there's nothing there either. Now, does that mean that I say, okay, I'm at the end of repression work? No, because there again, it's like there's nothing to land on. Not even the end, or I'm done. What would I get out of that? See, if I land on I'm done, there's probably contraction in the body that makes me land on that. Like I want to be done so I don't have to feel something. But if I'm truly just free and experiencing a lot of freedom in my life, I don't have to say I'm done. I can just comment on my life. I also don't have to land on I'm free. Because that would be the same repression that's just trying to create identity for safety. So you can really trust your experience generally, you know, always, even if it's not KI. But here you can really trust it because you get right to the very mechanism that produces the trauma responses. And you can test it out. Now, where does that lead me real quick? Am I just sitting here as an always perfectly peaceful person? No, I am just myself. That's what I am. It's just myself. Very naturally, presence is my experience, but that is very much the flavor of Scott. And I hope you can feel that the teacher that I was before wasn't me. And that this work has given me what I was ultimately looking for, which is myself. I had to get to the buried parts. So healing doesn't happen in a straight line for the reasons that I said. I won't repeat that. There's a lot of resistance that happens even in work like this. So when people come here, even though they learn the context that it's the repression of anger, like holding the expression of that back or hurt or sadness or something that's driving their suffering. Again, that doesn't mean that people inquire in a straight line. We, let alone does the healing happen in a straight line? Well, we don't stick to the process sometimes because we seek safety. We seek love and approval. So how can healing that we might discover here happen in a straight line if, again, we're motivated for something else? We just might not be aware of it. And we might say, well, it's just because I'm too busy. I can't do inquiry. Or it might be, oh, I'm resisting it. But it could be, our mind could be telling us anything. I don't like Dan McClintock. I don't like Scott. But is that a reason not to go to the unconscious and end suffering? Is any of it a reason? Right? See, what we do is we just block our freedom constantly until we become open, really, really open to the game that's being played here by the unconscious. So we don't have to get to, does it all end or where does it go? That could be keeping us safe. It's still an earnest question. They all are. Why else doesn't healing happen in a straight line? Because, as I said, we're people and we have operating system, seek safety. Along the way in the path, you'll see that even though, as I said, we learned that we have to work with the holding back of the expression of sadness, we will turn away from that. And we'll go into forms of this work that are safer than that. So we think, but really we're just staying safe and getting love by, again, and so that prolongs the path here for some people. It's just people not doing the work in a straight line. Many of us want that magic pill, you know. I used to deal with this in the treatment centers that I had. People would come in, okay, help me just get rid of the addiction now. This is a treatment center, but at the end of 30 days, I should be done with it all. So what? Oh, I didn't get done with it all? Okay, so I'm going to give you a bad review. No, we did really well, actually. But that's just not a realistic view of it. There's now science on that, that trauma drives addiction, and that trauma takes an extended period of processing, well, because we resist that. And so there can't be a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, on this. But as we continue to seek that, that also becomes a form of suffering, really. So we're always looking for the end, wanting to stay safe, instead of just being with our experience moment by moment, making the unconscious conscious, ending suffering in each moment until we're so conscious that we don't suffer, because that's what awakening is. I thought, now, okay, just real quick on this, I've already covered it. I thought before that you didn't have to get into the unconscious and you could sit here and watch everything come and go, right? And that by seeing everything come and go, you see, oh, that's not me, I'm the awakeness. But that has to include the buried stuff. But through the process, we really don't want to see that, see? So we'll resist that. So even when it comes into awareness on a given day, we experience the energetic changes from that. But then the mechanism goes, hold on, I'm not done. We're not done suffering. And it goes back to the body and its place, its hiding place, and it'll continue to generate suffering even after that processing. But that's why you have to stick in a straight line, because your system just wants to go back to suffering. That's the only straight line. Suffering, if you think about it. Suffering is the only straight line. The system just wants to stay safe and get love, and it's relentless in that, getting from A to B and not veering from that. But once you know that and you begin to make that conscious, that's the healing. It's just that the process of people doing inquiry doesn't have the kind of stamina that our conditioning through apparently evolution has, which is just focused on survival. Yeah, because we want it, some of us want it like that. And when I had treatment centers, I would say to people, that's the addict thinking. That's the trauma that doesn't want to feel the very stuff that was driving the addiction and just wants the instantaneous recovery without having to feel anything. But that's the reason that you became addicted. So to treat freedom as just another drug that you take, which just relieves you of the burden of feeling the pain of your past, that's not healing. Okay, so enough on healing, and I just want to do one more segment on forgiveness, since I said I was going to. Stay tuned. Forgiveness? I talked a little bit about it already. When I think I did, right? On the bully, writing the message to my bully. I have so much more experience with like seeking to make amends again in 12-step. The burden that I carried through my, there were two burdens. Yeah, two burdens. Which really ended up just being one, but the burden, the hatred, can I just say that? Hatred, before I processed it, because it was actually anger and hurt and fear, when the hatred was thawed out in the spine where the chronic pain was, I have to call it hatred and fear towards a certain group of people, men, because of the bullying that happened with boys my age, these were boys who were my friends. So there was just a, and that was at the tail end of growing up gay and like a girl boy and feeling like the world hated me. And so I hated the world back to stay safe. And when I, once I was bullied, then just hate the bullies too. And then bury all of that. And then on the surface look like an agreeable guy that blends in and is nice and so how do you forgive when your operating system is driven by frozen fear, hate, and anger, all frozen, all repressed, appearing as a physical body, but more specifically as spinal stenosis and maybe cancer? But I didn't have the work back then to verify that, just the science. Yeah, how do you forgive with that? What the hell was I doing through the years in 12-step or in awakening or in the way that I used to teach that? Because until you get to the buried hate, Scott, you don't, you're not forgiving yourself, others. And just to sit here and in that seeing that there are no others and there's no self, that's a real seeing, but to not deal with buried hate, big time bypass. Many people do it because it's safer just to rest as that undivided presence that's available to us with just a few pointers or practice than it is to get to the real divisionlessness of embodiment, of taking that all the way down into the body and seeing and feeling and experiencing, expressing and processing that buried hate, hurt, sadness, fear, anger. Because that's the forgiveness too. The healing and the forgiveness that you had, these are concepts. There's not two things. How can I forgive if I haven't healed, as we've defined healing here, which is really part of the awakening process? How can I, when from my conditioning, I'm always seeking safety and love at the unconscious level? So if I haven't gotten to that level, what I'm doing at the conscious level is not what I think it's for. I'm not actually really forgiving. I don't know what that is until I get my to my core driver, the real pain and fear. And that's buried. It's innocent, though. It's just so innocent. Wanting to end suffering before getting to the root of it. And then, in some ways, looking outside oneself as if that has something to do with other people. The healing part. And really, frankly, as if the forgiveness part has anything to do with other people. And that's why they go together so well. Of course we have to say, I'm sorry, or there are things that we've done that we may have to have conversations or more. Of course. But real forgiveness isn't that. That might be an extension of it. But real forgiveness is totally an inside job, and it's the healing itself. Because when you, it's like anything. When you sit just as awareness, when you first start to meditate, forget big realization or whatever that you might be looking for, just sitting in meditation, when you can just see thoughts come and go. Let's try it now. Don't try it, but notice that the words in your own awareness come and go, or images. Just notice and let them come and go. Or feeling, just being present to it and letting it be. Stay with the thought, just notice it and let it be as it is for as long as it's there. Just let a feeling be exactly as it is. If you're driving in your car, don't close your eyes. And people who say, hey, I listen to your podcast in the car. That's where I like to listen to podcasts. But be safe. So there's a forgiveness of sorts. Just being and allowing. And that's helpful and not the whole enchilada. It's helpful to see that forgiveness is really an inside job, so to speak, even though there's no inside and outside, ultimately. But just to allow thoughts and feelings to come and go, it's everything is just being forgiven in each moment. That's really a good way of seeing forgiveness. It's based in presence, allowing everything to be, all the pain, all the stories that come up, without even inquiring, just let be what comes up. Notice it. Notice how it hangs out for a bit. Notice how it falls away. Notice that awareness remains every time. It's a good start on forgiveness. It's actually a good start on healing, on making the unconscious conscious. That's how we're defining healing. But how can you really make the unconscious conscious just by doing that? When most of the unconsciousness is the buried emotions that don't come up. And how can there truly be forgiveness within your own experience of whatever pain you're carrying around if the buried emotions that are the source of most of that pain aren't coming up to be forgiven in awareness? Can't you see how that affects all the relationships with people that you either want forgiveness from or they want it from you? That you haven't forgiven yourself yet, perhaps. Don't go to the mind. Right now, don't do it. Love yourself more than that. Just notice the mind here. I want to talk to you. Don't try to convince yourself that you've forgiven everybody. Don't go that way. Because that's the mind staying safe. Just watch all that. I want you to hear me about forgiveness in a different way. If you go with the mind, if you try to tell yourself as part of your spiritual resume, I did it too. We all do it to some degree. It's okay. Just let it come and go. That if you tell yourself, well, I've put that to rest. And although I don't talk to Annie anymore, I don't really suffer over any of that. And Joe, yeah, we were together for a while and I loved him. It ended badly, but I've done a lot of processing and I don't do any of that right now. Please. Instead, just hear me. Go back to Annie. And whoever your Annie is, you know, make it about your life. And pull Annie up. Or your Annie, rest and feel into your whole body, especially where you have contraction. And just say this, I'm not angry at Annie or whoever your person is, and only trust your body. If your mind comes up with stuff, you just watch it. But we're looking to see if there's any contraction. That is the repression. Say it again. I'm not angry at Annie for any reason. See, people who repress anger, for example, they wouldn't experience anger here. So they might think they're not angry at Annie. But the anger is buried. It's the contraction that they feel. The more sense of a physical body that's contracting there in some way. A hurt repressor, they might feel anger here. They might, because they can't feel hurt. So the anger might be accessible when they say, I'm not angry. But see, you're very hurt. So in any sense here, what I'm saying is the contraction is what we follow in any scenario there. So when you say, I'm not hurt by Annie, there may be things that arise, but those are safer than what you've buried. It's the contraction in the body we're feeling here. I'm not hurt by Annie. Still, any contraction? A small contraction does not mean a small amount of repression. Repression is hidden. You could just be feeling the very surface of it. It's basically a sense of a physical body. So trust that. And then go back to anger. I can get angry at Annie. I can go back to Annie or whoever it is and get angry and say, this is why I'm angry. Feel the contraction. If there's any contraction, it means no, I can't. It's just unconscious. So there's repression involved with this person, see? Or I can show my hurt to this person. I can go call them up. Even though because I've healed everything, then I should be able to just be really open with this person. I can call him up and just express my hurt. See if the contraction responds. So what I learned that I had anger repression and I found contraction around some people that I thought that I had already processed around, including bullies, it stopped me in my tracks, actually, in terms of what my mind was saying about that, about forgiveness, and frankly, about healing, or even awakening, really, because it clearly wasn't embodied. The awakeness wasn't, because, well, that contraction contained, as I saw, fear of expressing anger to my Annie and whoever else. But it was the buried anger, it was the contraction. So, what I learned right there, what stopped me in my tracks is, I don't have any business, really, trying to forgive Annie or get Annie's forgiveness if I'm still raging, pissed at Annie, but I buried it and now it's a contraction in my body so that I hide the anger from myself and lie to myself at the surface so I can be a spiritual person and a teacher. Suffering is suffering. I'm talking about my bullies here. I had to go back and realize that no matter how much processing or what message I sent to my bully or whatever, no, I'm fucking pissed and I buried it. And there can't be no forgiveness there at the surface. That's a seeking of safety and getting love. And that's exactly what I was doing. In some way, if he would have said, oh, I've totally got that. I'm grown up now, Scott. And we hurt each other when we were kids. I'd be like, ah, I got love from my bully. My life is complete. That's not realistic. Because that guy was not going to respond that way. Maybe yours will. Your dad or your mom. But why are we looking outside of ourselves? First, we got to go within to the parts that we buried, as I've said, for the healing. And then the healing is the forgiveness, because as we see, well, the reason I want forgiveness is because I'm still suffering. I haven't healed. I have repression still. I'm suffering around this situation. I'm creating this suffering. That's what you see here. I'm creating this suffering. This is where it gets crazy. I'm creating, unconsciously, albeit, this suffering around Annie. And then I'm seeking forgiveness or vice versa from Annie at the conscious level while I continue to be pissed at or hurt by Annie at the unconscious level. And then once I think I've gotten forgiveness from Annie or vice versa, I'm going to walk away feeling better, maybe safer. I got love. But I'm still pissed. I haven't even forgiven myself around that. I'm lying to myself. And to Annie, truthfully. What would be truthful would be, hey, Annie, I haven't done all my work. I'm very scared of anger. In fact, I don't even think I bury it. I'm probably pissed at you, but I'm a people pleaser. And if I think I can, if I can get your forgiveness here, I can just not suffer, hopefully, because this is making me suffer. Or if I was a little more conscious, I would say, okay, Annie, I haven't gotten to all the buried anger yet, but I'm seeking forgiveness because I need to stay safe right now and get your love. And if you give your forgiveness to me, I will stay safe and get love for a little bit, although I know I have to get back to my buried anger and fear and hurt. That's a little more conscious. But what's really conscious for me is realizing I didn't have to go back to most people, because I was just attacking myself by burying anger my whole life and creating a lot of suffering for myself. And the suffering that I was creating for myself wasn't near the suffering that whatever I thought they were creating or that happened in the original event, because trauma just keeps happening. I needed to forgive myself. But that needed to go all the way to the rage and the fear and the hurt and the humiliation, which was all in the same place. It's funny how when you really forgive yourself for all the suffering that you've created, and it's not a thought or belief, there's just the weight of that is gone energetically. That you really don't seek forgiveness from other people. And you're not going to get it anyway. We don't get what we want from other people. When we look for it, we suffer. Forgiveness is one of those needs that comes from repression, like the need for approval. It's all perfect that we do that. But we should see it for what it is, or we'll keep suffering. I almost felt like I was done there, but there was something I want to say, which is, to the extent there's been division in the spiritual community, for whatever reason, or within communities, or between teachers, or people, or on Facebook, or wherever there ends up being a lot of division around spirituality, because there's a lot of disconnection in spirituality, guys. There really is. Which is fine. We shouldn't be singing Kumbaya. But what I'm saying by that is these are very important matters to us. Issues around spirituality and what it is and for people. And I want you to think about... it's interesting that I'm bringing this up here at the end. It must be coming up for a reason. Well, it's how we've changed our work here, actually, is that we've been dealing with people that are coming to this work who, as I've said before, sometimes people won't get to the root of suffering until they've exhausted everything else, because everything else provides safety. When you get to the root of suffering, you're just ending suffering. But their system thinks that's unsafe. So people have come here and... done the work, or learned the work in the beginning. But they've, when they've started the work, they've realized that they have a string of even teachers and facilitators and therapists and coaches and mentors and sponsors and friends who tried to help along the way. And it didn't work. Because we don't want to heal. We don't want to awaken. And maybe some of those teachers, coaches, and therapists had a responsibility in that. I guarantee you they did. Because there's a huge bypass going on in all these different fields. And those of us who know about this know it. And so that's created a lot of resentment. I've seen in the people that have come to this work. Like, someone will come to this work... I'll start working with them or one of our trainers, and they've had teacher trauma, like real disconnection from the very thing that they thought would free them. Like, they were not always just being involved in a cult, but being involved in a community in which something happened and they were traumatized. And there are people, that's happened for people here. I've been in conflict with a couple of people, and I'm sure that they were wounded from that. Earlier in my teaching, there were relationships that were severed that affected me deeply. I had to process it. But there's an overall thing here where we carry our trauma into spirituality, and because we're trying to stay safe and get love. And when we look at someone like a teacher or a therapist or anyone who's trying to help us, when they can't help us, it's safer to just blame them and look for somebody else. And I've really caught on to that pattern, because when people come here, they often come here because they hear me criticizing teachers and teachings out there. But I've done my work and I'm not angry at them. And so my criticisms are more discernment. I'm saying that if you don't pay attention to spiritual practice and which ones lead to a bypass and which not, you're prolonging your suffering. That's why I'm criticizing other practices. It's very practical. But there was a time when I was fucking pissed. And a lot of you are too, or hurt by teachings, communities, teachers, or by me, or this community, or within this community, because we really express ourselves here, you know, and there just stuff happens. But no matter what, my invitation is this. At some point, no matter where we are in spirituality or what, don't we have to? Don't we absolutely have to forgive ourselves if we're going to end suffering, no matter where we are? Don't we have to heal no matter where we are? Isn't that why we came, to be free and experience that? But part of the healing and the forgiveness is not to sing kumbaya and hold hands with all the people in the past who didn't help us. Not that. But it's to free ourselves from even that suffering. So what I invite people to do is what my own trainees and mentees are doing now, which is they come with their own pain and a string of teachers or facilitators that they've worked with that now, in addition to being hurt and angry by dad and mom and people from the past, now it's this teacher and that facilitator and that therapist. It's just a lot of pain. And what I say here is you have a brand new opportunity that you haven't had, perhaps, in all the string of those, which is to heal all of that. Because if you think I'm over here just making divisions in the spiritual community to bolster some sense of self, you've got me all wrong. I owe my life to the non-dual teachings and traditions, and I've said that before. The reason I criticize them is because I owe my life to that. You see, when it's like when somebody defects from the government as a government worker because they want to whistleblow, that's because they love their country. They love what they're doing. I love awakening and the non-dual traditions. That's why I criticize them. But people with repression sometimes don't hear that. And they come here and they think, well, I'm just going to jump on the bandwagon and let's just get angry and pissed off or whatever I'm safe to feel about all the people that didn't help me before. And Scott will help me with that. And I'll say, no, you're going to have to, face the anger that you buried and the hurt and the sadness that you buried in all those past relationships. That's a part of KI. And yes, you're going to be angry at the people that hurt you, anger repressors. You will. But this isn't a free-for-all where we come and then just, because that's just more suffering. Here, you have the opportunity for a true healing and forgiveness is what I'm saying. But you have to take it all the way. You have to be willing to bring all of your relationships, all of your spiritual practices, your past hurt that you experienced with teachers or whomever, all of that, your mom and dad, that's you carry that in your body right now. You have to bring your body. And that's what you bring here. So when you come here, you already bring all that. And so if you really want healing and forgiveness of all that, you got to go into the body with all of that. Otherwise, you'll leave here and you'll carry me in your body. And now you have another person that you're angry at or hurt by. But here's another opportunity, because I don't need you to like me here. That's part of my healing. I'm actually just interested in people's freedom. There are people that I don't like and I see them happy and I'm happy. It doesn't make me enlightened or special. It just makes me free. Do you want to be free? If you do, you'll bring it all into inquiry process. And you'll look back at everything you did in spirituality and you'll realize you probably bypassed the shit out of things or you've been avoiding stuff a long, long time. But that'll all be accepted and forgiven when you really go to the place where you need to go, the repression. That will all be. And if anywhere along the way you haven't forgiven your entire history and everything that you think that you are, stick around. Because there's more suffering if just that's what we're here for. We're going to keep creating suffering and a reason to seek forgiveness. and healing until we wise up that we're creating it and it's our responsibility. Thank you for listening. I want to take a moment to say that always in the description of this podcast, I put the link to the free repression test to get started on the path. I also just say you can always go to killaby.com and scroll to the bottom of the page, and there's a free repression test, and that gets you on the newsletter either way, and then we start sending you some resources to give you choices about this work. And I also want to say this. I was going to take, I don't know if I mentioned it, I think I did, I was going to take a break, and I may take one in the next week or so. If you don't see a podcast episode, know that Scott is traveling. He did not feel inspired to do a podcast episode, but I'll be back. And I want to say thank you. I've actually never said that to people who come to this work. And that I think is part of my own repression. I am grateful for the people who come and listen and the people who are doing this work. Just because, you know, it's a lot more fun for people to listen than for me to just sit and talk to no one. And I'm grateful that there are people on earth who are really earnestly interested in getting to the root of suffering. And it's my pleasure to do these podcasts. So the reason I bring that up is because I'm doing a lot of 1-minute shorts, if you notice on social media, and that's just to get people interested. There's not much you can really say in a minute, but they're okay. This podcast, because I'm not doing long videos, and there's no other place where you'll see me do long-winded teachings, thank you for giving me this space to fully express what this work has done in my life. So I don't have to just do 1-minute shorts. So thank you. And thank you for your patience with this longer podcast tonight. I try to keep them 1.5 hours or lower. And this one went a little bit longer. Thank you.